Welcome to Warships Pod, and a two-part discussion with Lee Pilgrim, a returning guest, about the decline of the Royal Navy since the 1990s and what to do about it.
Hi there, thanks for having me.
It's always great to have you on here, Lee, and we're going to discuss the state of the Royal Navy. In particular, you've put out some very good social media posts recently about the way things have evolved over the past 30 or so years. But first of all, I'd like to take listeners on a bit of time travel back to the very first edition of Warships IFR, which was the April of 1998, with the newly commissioned or a couple of years old Vanguard-class Trident missile submarine HMS Vigilant on the cover. And I decided to, before we did this recording, to leaf through our news pages in that very first edition. And it was very interesting to see some of the headlines there, because among them was the fact that Tomahawk land attack cruise missiles had now been introduced into service, or was about to be in the Royal Navy for use from Trafalgar class attack submarines then, and the arrival of the landing platform helicopter carrier HMS Ocean, a new era in littoral warfare, or amphibiosity, as they might have called it then. The arrival of the ship was delayed, and everybody was very eager to see this new vessel in service, which would restore to the Royal Marines the ability to do vertical insertion or vertical assault, and also had landing craft. That was an eagerly awaited ship. And then at the time, Devonport Dockyard was still refitting Type 22 frigates and was waiting decisions on more refits there. And it was interesting to note, if I can just find it without digressing too much, it was interesting to note that there was a destroyer being refitted at one of the dockyards at the time, and the refit was about £30 million. I've got it here. So you had Babcock saying, we need some more refits of Type 22 frigates and other vessels. And then Babcock, Rosyth Defence Limited, as it was known then up at Rosyth Dockyard, had announced that it had secured a £30 million contract to refit the Type 42 destroyer HMS Southampton, which was fairly old by that time. There was something on the second batch of Sandown-class mine hunters, which were being introduced into service, and that accommodation for women sailors was being improved so that those mine hunters could continue to do their work. There was news of a British frigate doing humanitarian aid in, I think it was in off the west coast of Africa, and also the aircraft carrier HMS Illustrious was about to return home for modifications to enable her to carry even more carriers. I think it was up to 20 aircraft that she could carry. And then the most interesting thing I found in our news pages regarding the Royal Navy, which comes right to something that's being discussed on social media today, was that the last Royal Navy floating dock at Faz Lane, otherwise known as HM Naval Base Clyde in Scotland, had been sold off, and that now the Royal Navy wouldn't need such facilities because it had this shiplift shed, massive building on the Clyde for the new Vanguard class submarines. And of course, the dockyard at Devonport was busily working its way through refits on the Trafalgar class submarines. So the floating dock that was needed for in-service maintenance was no longer needed. And here we are 30 years on, 28 years on. And in fact, the Royal Navy now needs a floating dock. And it seems that although the Royal Navy has talked about it and many other things ever since the magazine was launched in 1998, it still hasn't got one, but badly needs it because it can't get submarines into dry docks. And the much vaunted shiplift shed, as we call it, at Faz Lane, only has fitful availability. So what do you think, Lee? Have we moved on since the late 90s? I mean, have things got... are we just caught in a sort of groundhog day of naval defence, do you think? Is that where we are?
I think across defence as a whole, the UK, for whatever reason, doesn't seem to be in the greatest place. And it's easily emphasised by what's going on in the Royal Navy, because it's the easiest thing to go and see. You can see ships, you can see submarines, you can see where they are. Whereas with the Army, they can say they've got X available or Y available, and the same with the Air Force. But I think it's the Royal Navy that really shows how poorly the MOD has managed itself over the last 20 years. Some people would call it we are at the bottom of the V. And by that, I mean, you hear all this talk, positive talk about the Type 26, Type 31, all of these things coming soon. But to get there, we've had to sink so low that do we really have a Royal Navy that is global, that is available, and that is usable? And looking at the numbers at the moment, I would suggest, and as I put in my thread, we would be very, very hard pressed to be able to do anything that we could do in the late 1990s. And that's not just through mass of equipment, but that's through personnel as well. So we've got over 20,000 naval personnel, yet we still struggle to crew the ships that we have available. And if you look at what's available at the moment, I'll sort of read it out, because it's very easy to read now. You can read it in a couple of paragraphs. Both aircraft carriers are available. I think the Prince of Wales is moving up to do an exercise of Type 45. We've got one HMS Dragon that's on its way now to the Middle East. But we've got three undergoing refit, and we've got another one in maintenance. So in effect, 2 out of 6. And then we come to the we'll call it the shambles of the Type 23 fleet, of which Iron Duke has been slowly whittled away. HMS Richmond is being decommissioned. HMS Somerset is out there. HMS Sutherland is out there. But then Kent, Portland and St Albans are either in refit or various states of maintenance. And then if we want to get really depressing, we can look at the Astute class of submarines. That's Astute, Ambush, Artful, Audacious and Anson. So talking about over £6 billion worth of invested hardware. And of that, we've only got HMS Anson deployed for exactly the reasons that you said, in that we don't have the maintenance capability to look after those submarines. So it's not a great place. The Navy are also advertising that the P-2000s are also up into Norway. HMS Archer now is 41 years old. So it's a little P-2000 that's going up there, and it's doing the job of what we would have had a frigate or an OPV doing in the past. So it's not great. Gone are the days where we had publications that would come out every year sort of showing the Royal Navy in nice little A5 booklets of 110 to 115 pages. As someone said on X the other day, we could probably get that now into a pamphlet. I'll stop there, because or else I'll start ranting before I even go into the amphibious fleet.
I mean, the truth is that with a bit of humble boasting or showing off for Warships IFR, we do publish regularly a guide to the Royal Navy, which is actually A4. And it has been difficult to fill the fleet list as time has gone on. Because if you look at our first edition of the Warships International Fleet Review Guide to the Royal Navy in the early 2000s, it was like 30 frigates and destroyers, 11 submarines, attack submarines, blah, 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 three carriers. So it's gradually been whittled down and whittled down and whittled down until we now have the situation where we include warships in build and not completed.
Yep.
in the hopes of making it look less depressing and less desperate than it actually is. So is it a case, do you think, Lee, that governments have decided that navies are just too expensive to have, or the mere idea of refitting a frigate to keep it going with, you know, a couple of hundred million, which is probably the equivalent of that 30 million that would have been spent on that destroyer back in the late 90s.
Yeah.
And they just, like many governments, and in fact, kings of England and Britain in the past, just think, why am I spending so much money on these things that need so much investment and people to operate them when I could spend it on other things? So they just have given up the idea of how you need to constantly maintain a fleet to even have a few ships at sea. Do you think that's what it is?
Yeah, I think people look at defence, or governments look at defence, and they see it as a burden of expenditure until they need it. It's like the emergency service that they don't like paying for, because is there votes in it? There's not the votes today that there was in the past. And even in the past, you know, defence was still in the background. If you look at voting intentions today and you look where defence sits, defence is only important or is only on people's consciousness when something happens. So with the Iran conflict at the moment, you know, defence is moving back up the agenda again because something has happened. You only have to look at the previous 6 weeks before the US did what they did in Iran to see the Royal Navy actually withdrawing their final mine and countermeasures vessel out of the region. The Type 23 guard ship that's now in the region, or gate guard, So it's not a guard ship anymore. It's just a gate guard, a floating gate guard that's there. You only have to look at that as a prime example of, you know, where the Navy has reached the bottom of the V. You have the fleet commander coming out and saying, that's not what our allies are asking us to provide anymore. They want us to provide tier one and tier two or SOF specialists. And, you know, what happened with that? That was quite quickly sort of kicked into the long grass when they found out, no, what actually those allies in the region did actually need was a naval presence, an air defence presence, and not just a one star sat in a headquarters in Bahrain with a staff of people with no platforms to manage. You know, it was quite damning to see that as everything's kicking off in the Middle East, that MC, that mine countermeasures vessel, was actually being carried back into the UK on the back of another ship.
Yeah.
So it doesn't look good. And then you get the press, regardless of whether it's left-wing or right-wing press, to say, what are you doing? You look at the destroyers. The destroyers were actually being made ready to go up north to support HMS Prince of Wales on NATO exercises. So you've then got to look at the priorities of the Royal Navy and the priorities of government. You know, where is the priority? Is the priority to do exercises and look good? Or is the priority actually to go out there and support allies in regions where we know problems will be occurring? You know, what would be the difference there if we did have a Type 45 out in that region at the moment? You know, our allies would be looking at us to say thanks very much, because there is another tier of air defence. And as we've seen in the Red Sea, Aster-30 is actually pretty good at its job. It's pretty good at taking missiles and targets out of the sky. But where were they all? You know, they were in various states of maintenance in Portsmouth. So what does that tell you about where the Royal Navy is looking? Is it looking at delivering exercises, or is it looking at delivering effect? The excuse that you hear, carrier strike with 25 has taken a lot out of the Royal Navy, which begs the question, was CSG 25 a good idea for the Royal Navy to do? It's already killed a Type 23. The F-35 fleet is still regenerating. But we do have two carriers. We do have, you know, both carriers now are active and available. We just have no escorts to escort them around. And we have no aircraft to put on board them, because they're all down at the floating airfield that is Cyprus. So again, it baffles me a bit to say, where is the sort of, you know, the grand strategic and strategic planning in this, in that we have to see ship companies rapidly stand to get a vessel ready for sea that's in the middle of its maintenance period, that then has to do a quick FOST in the channel, that then has to go to Suda Bay to do its ranging and all of its telemetry and everything before it's available. So, I'm a bit confused.
But in simple terms, what we're saying there is that you have some units, some ships like the Daring Class destroyers, which have this amazing Aster missile system that has been proved in the Red Sea, but there's only ever one or two of those available at any one time, and you can't send one to the north if you need to send it to the Eastern Mediterranean. And then the frigates, as you're suggesting there, just for the less specialist listeners. And so we have the Type 23 frigates, like HMS Lancaster, just like sister vessel HMS Montrose, was sent out to the Gulf towards the end of her career, because they recognised the Type 23 frigates were coming to the end, to do patrols out there when it was fairly placid at that time, while other Type 23s were sent around the world and worn out even quicker, and then they come back home, and pretty soon they're out of service as well. So it's being run hot, and it's burning through all these various vessels, and they're then being either put into maintenance or they're being retired from service. But somewhere along the line, I get confused, because I would have thought that somebody in the naval staff or at the top of the Navy would explain to politicians in particular, who hold the purse strings, that if you only have three warships, you only have one available, or if you keep pushing them, then they'll wear out, and that these new ones are going to take years to come. So that's a pretty basic way to get a hold of the attention of politicians, isn't it? Just to explain to them that you don't actually have that many anyway.
I always go back to the Falklands War. So I go all the way back to the Falklands War, when the fleet commander then, Admiral Lewin, was asked, you know, what have we got? What's available? and what do we need? So he said, this is what we've got, this is what's available, and this is what we need. And there's a famous line that says, we have to send the fleet. And he went, what, all of it? He said, yep, pretty much. But he had vessels available to do that. Now we just do not have the vessels available to do all of the taskings that the Royal Navy are tasked to do. Hence, we see NATO Standing Group 1, which I think Dragon was going to be the flagship for, had to be replaced by a German vessel. So now you've got the one-star Royal Navy officer on a German vessel. Yep, there you go. There's NATO interoperability. It's working very, very well. But it's the fact that we just don't have those platforms or vessels available to do all the things that we said we were going to do, that we said we want to do, and the things that we should do. We look at the Type 23. Again, for those listeners out there, Type 23, the ones that we have remaining now, has got a thing on the back called a Sonar 2087, which is a big trailing cable that they trail out the back to listen for Russian submarines. Its job is to go out and protect the continuous at sea deterrent, which is the ground strategic platform that the UK has, makes it one of the 5 UN permanent members and a top tier power. We have enough T-23s now probably to sustain that and nothing else. Iron Duke, for example, which was supposed to get its 2087 fitted, was quietly dropped as they worked out that the vessel was no longer fit for purpose. So now the Type 23 fleet, its primary role is going to your 3-to-1 rule, is there pretty much to sustain and maintain that towed array patrol ship, TAPS, role, and it normally would do that in conjunction with an attack submarine, an SSN. But as I read out earlier from the list, we have no SSNs available. The only one that's out there is HMS Anson that was sent to Australia to support AUKUS, which then had to be redirected and is probably sat somewhere around the Middle East at the moment. So when you're looking at the fleet commander, because that's his responsibility to be able to manage and maintain and run operations on a daily basis, that's his job up to Second Sea Lord and First Sea Lord, and then into the MOD, to MSHQ, to say, this is what we've got, this is what we need. Something somewhere has gone wrong. The defence budget is £62 to £64 billion. Are we, as taxpayers, getting the best value for money out of the money that is going into the Navy? Yes, they've got Type 26 coming online. When? Yes, they've got Type 31 coming online. When? The Navy have also presented themselves a problem in that now they've got two warships that use different command and control systems. So now you've suddenly got two training lines that you have to run. So it's more difficult in the future to be able to cross-deck those people across from T-26 to T-31 because the mission systems they're using are ever so slightly different. So you've got all of these things. It comes back to the where is that strategic thinking? Where is that sort of overall holistic approach to the Royal Navy? And that's even before we get to the amphibious fleet. We'd have seen last week, for those that read Warships IFR and others, that one of the LPDs has now been rebadged. I think they painted the new pennant number on the platform last week. £73 million was spent on refitting. I think it was HMS Albion. I might be wrong. I think we're selling it to
HMS Bulwark.
There we go, HMS Bulwark. £73 million was spent on it.
Yeah.
And I think we're selling it to Brazil for £20 million. So you have to look at, you know, with no replacement in sight, and that goes the same for when we go back to HMS Ocean, no replacement in sight. MRSS, multi-role support ship, it's still a concept. They don't quite know what it is. There is no overlap. And then you look at the LPAs, the landing platform auxiliary docks, the bay class. People have to remember they're not warships. They're auxiliary vessels, so they cannot do the same job as a warship with sailors, with damage control and all the other things. So if people go on to a warship, they'll find that there's pipes and wires everywhere, and that's all for resilience. When you go on to an auxiliary, you'll find that in the compartments, there are fewer pipes and wires and all the other bits and bobs because the damage control isn't there because it's not designed to go into a war zone. So when you're saying, oh, we can deliver X with Y, Royal Marines using a landing platform auxiliary like a bay class, you can't. Now you look at Lion Bay. I think Lion Bay is in its third role now in 4 months as they try and refit it as a mine and mine warfare mothership. even though the Royal Navy have spent a lot of money on HMS Stirling Castle. If you go onto the Navy website, HMS Stirling Castle has been purchased to be a mining countermeasure mothership. So why are they not using the vessel that they bought? Why are they using the Swiss Army knife, it seems, of the Royal Fleet Auxiliary to do that? Again, a bit of a ramble there, but hopefully you sort of get the gist. There just seems to be the lack of strategic thought in where the Navy's going, what the Navy's doing. Yes, we have two aircraft carriers. So what? Brilliant. Well done. There's the two BMWs on your driveway that you can't drive. You can only drive them at weekends and you can't afford the parts and you can't equip it with all the things that it needs to be able to be used when you should have four Astras or four family cars out there that you could use.
If you go back to the late 90s or the mid 90s, the early 90s, post-Cold War, there'd been some defence cuts and a few more underway. Wasn't it really a generation of political leaders were still around then who understood the worth of the Navy, not just the cost of it? And they, although there were cuts underway, they still understood that, you know, it's there to be used. So when you had, you know, a crisis in the Balkans in the early 90s, then you know, there was a rolling commitment of a carrier group there to work along with allies offshore, as well as troops ashore. And there were all these things going on around the world, you know, to do with disaster relief, with a patrol in the Gulf to keep a lid on things and to help people out in times of emergency. But if you're the intellect of your leaders is not open to the idea of why a Navy, because we're a naval podcast, is above all the most valuable asset Britain can have in peace as well as war. Isn't that where it all comes from in the beginning? And the naval leadership is then given its either given direction by them or it's not, because surely the Navy has to look to governments for direction of where it goes with certain investments and also, you know, due to its budget, which it may or may not be allocated. Isn't that where it really lies, the blame?
We live in an odd time. We live in a time where we're a maritime nation where 90% of our trade is done by sea, 99% of our communications comes through cables under the sea. Yet we don't seem to, you know, recognise, going back to Julian Corbett, the British way of war. So I've rattled on about this before in the past. You know, the British way of war, we seem to be quite good at doing the lawfare, but very, very poor at actually doing the how do we back that lawfare up? How do we back that up with military power? We're a maritime nation. We're an island. You know, history suggests that it's our niche point. Yes, we have armies and we have air forces and we have all the other bits and bobs, but it's the Navy that shapes our way of life. It's the maritime domain that shapes. We get most of our trade comes from the sea. We look at Europe and everything like that, but it's still got to come across the water. All of our comms, all of those underwater cables, as a service centre and a financial service centre, you know, that's the way that the UK makes most of its money. For those cables to go, for those cables to be cut, the ability for the UK to generate income is severely restricted. Does the government understand that? Does the MOD enforce that? I think they jump from shiny to shiny to shiny. And we can see this in Telic, in the Gulf, and then within Afghanistan. We're very short term. We only look at the thing that's right in front of us, and then we become a bunch of heroes and go and fix and go and do that. We're very, very good, as was proved when they spun Prince of Wales up at short notice. We're very, very good to react to things. We seem to be extremely bad at planning for things. And that's reflected now by the fact that if you look at the disposition of the Royal Navy, you know, we have two aircraft carriers available. We have no escorts for them to actually go and do the job that they're there to do. Yes, going up to Norway and pottering around the coast and looking good for a NATO exercise might get a couple of NATO ticks. But it's there to, you know, generate sovereign power to tell our adversaries that if we need to, going on to your point earlier, we can move assets from point A to point B to generate effect. At the moment, and I was at the Sea Power conference for Warships IFR, Admiral Blount said it very, very well. you know, NATO no longer is the UK, can do the things it says it can do. You know, that they look at us to say, yes, it's great on paper, but we don't actually see the actions and the means, just the various conferences you go to talk about how good a game you could play, but you haven't got any players. They're all just aspirational purchases, or they're all just sat there on the bench.
Yeah, I mean, so the old thing about talk the talk, but, you know, can you do the walk the walk? And also that conference, the summit you covered for us, for Sea Lord Sea Power conference, the big thing there was, from the first Sea Lord himself, was about the hybrid Navy, which you've talked about on here before. So
yeah,
we've got to look at that elephant in the corner, whatever you want to call it, sitting in the corner. And it just occurs to me that although the first Sea Lord is thinking, right, we've got to get mass, we've got to have a few ships out there, but we need to increase their mass. And we've had an article recently in the magazine about how drones, you know, autonomous warships could work with the Type 26 frigate and others to actually combat the Russian submarine threat. But the problem is you've only got one or two of them, and they, in terms of Type 26 frigates, and, you know, if you've only got six or eight, you know, you some of them will be in maintenance, as we've just discussed. Some of them won't be operable. You might need them to be in training, or ships have leave. So it's all about scale. So at that conference, the first Sea Lord talked about the hybrid Navy, Atlantic Bastion, and all the rest of it, which we've discussed before, as I've just said. But did you get any kind of convincing understanding, or have you had since, that anybody anywhere outside of the first Sea Lord and his staff, or the Navy itself, understands the sheer scale of the challenge? That, you know, it's drones, as I said in a social media post, they seem to be the new silver bullet. You know, we've got this magic bullet that we can fire into the werewolf, you know, shoot the werewolf with the drone bullet, and they've drunk the elixir of drones. But, you know, it seems that might be because they seemingly are less expensive, or they, as you said, shiny, the latest innovation to boast about and give out a few minor contracts on, minor in terms of defence spending. And, you know, do the politicians really believe in it, even if the first Sea Lord does? And is he managing to get across to them that it's an integrated thing? You still need warships, you still need firepower, and you still need mass. So, you know, a few months on from maybe the last time we talked about it, where is the hybrid Navy? Where is all this stuff?
I'm going to be the cynic here. It's the new shiny. You know, it's the toy that everybody sees that's being used to good effect with in the Ukrainian conflict at the moment and within Iran. But it's a new shiny. It's, you know, have we seen one actually work yet? Have we seen the doctrine and the concepts being written so that we can actually go out and deploy them? It's great going out and buying new kit, but unless we've actually got doctrine and we've got people that have actually tested it and used it, it is the Type 91, the Type 92, and all the other things that are being talked about. They're all coulds and woulds and shoulds. There are no musts. So the T-26 is a must. Why is it a must? We know how to work warships. We know how to do anti-submarine warfare, and we know how to do it with people. So that's the first thing that you get out there. So you continue the what we can do. What we could do and what we should do and what we must do, that comes later, but you need mass out there first before you start doing it. If a Type 26 is going out with hybrid vessels, it's got to be tested first. You've got to practice it. You've got to go through the development cycle. What we need at the moment is in the first instance, we need something to replace the legacy Type 23s who are there protecting Military Task 1. Military Task 1 is the continuous at sea deterrent. Talking about hybrid vessels going out and doing some stuff, that's great. But what the UK needs, or what the Royal Navy needs to do in the first instance, is get a Type 26 worked up and get it replacing the Type 23s that are reaching the end of their lives. You know, there's pictures at the moment, I think they were published over the weekend, showing the hull status of some of the Type 23s that are sat there at the moment in the estuary. You know, anybody can see the fact that the metal is bubbling. It's, you know, we're deploying 23s up in the high north, which is hard on the vessel because the weather is poor. we should stop focusing on the middle horizon and start focusing on the near horizon. In the first instance, we need vessels to replace vessels. All the other stuff is great, and it's great for the First Sea Lord to say, this is my vision for the future. This is what we're looking to do. What about the now? You know, it's the now that costs money. It's the now that's needed. It's the now, you know, that's the thing that's causing the current problem. It's the now, the fact that we can only put one Type 45 to sea. It's the now that says, whilst we put Naval Strike Missile onto Type 23, we actually test-fired Naval Strike Missile onto Type 23. Why is that? Is that because if we fire the missile, the hull might not be able to cope? You know, you've got all of these things that are out there. So having a great hybrid Navy in the future, you know, the Navy also needs to be focusing on the problems that we have today. The problems that we have today, we do not have enough vessels to fulfill all the tasks that we have out there. And the key task, and I'll keep harping back to it, which is military task number one, that protection of the, you know, the continuous at sea deterrent. The vessels that we currently have doing it are slowly eroding and coming offline. Iron Duke had £103 million spent on her, and that only gave her an extra 18 months of life tops. What about the other vessels that are there? How much life have they actually got left in them? You know, why aren't we spending the money now instead of looking at the new hybrid stuff and accelerating the Type 26 into the water? Why are we not spending the money now on accelerating Type 31 into the water? You know, it's time for the Navy to get out of the bottom of the V, to stop looking at the top of the V on the other side, to say this is where we want to be, with no real plan to get us from the bottom onto the first rung of the ladder, which is start replacing the vessels that you've got that are coming to the end of their lives with new vessels, where you need to train the crew up, where you need to introduce the crew to new equipment, where you need to get the vessel out to sea to test it. Where are all those plans? We see the First Sea Lord at the moment going around talking about Bastion and all the other things. That's great. That's in the future. You know, everybody can see that today. Britski is very, very good every month. He posts on Twitter, on X, you know, the current state of the Royal Navy. And over the last 18 months, that list has been getting smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. At some point, the First Sea Lord is going to have to knock on the door to MSHQ, to the Chief Defence Staff, and say, unfortunately, I can no longer do the things that you're tasking me to do. But don't worry, in 6 or 7 years in the 2030s, we might have these hybrid drones that are working with Type 26. The moment is gone. And again, when it comes to budget cycles, will the money be there in 29, 30 for these things to actually deploy? People are talking about stuff at the moment that they know they will not be responsible for in the future. That's why the dip's delayed.
The defence investment plan, yeah.
The defence investment plan that's supposed to match the SDR. Where is that? You know, that's in a place at the moment where they're looking at the amount of money available against the amount of money that they need. And it's saying, yep, we will, you know, it's the jam tomorrow. Ed Stringer says it really now. It's the say-do gap. We say lots of things, but we can only do a few. My concern, and why I write the thread and everything like that, is we're very, very good at navel-gazing and looking at the future and what we could be. We're not very good at looking at the problems that we've got today. Problems that we've got today is those Type 23s are reaching the end of their lives. Yet we're talking about hybrid Type 91s, hybrid Type 93s. We're talking about MRSS. We're talking about future this and future that. I think the Navy needs to focus a bit more on, we might have a couple of problems now. Treasury, can you help us out here by investing a bit more money so we can get these ships into the water a bit quicker? Because soon we're going to have, you know, there will be a time where we will have no TAPS platform available, because the TAPS platform that's out there has gone US, unserviceable for a reason. I think it was shown on a Channel 5 warship program once, where the sonar, the 2087 sonar, went US. It went unserviceable. I think also on that program, it showed you how close a Russian submarine can actually get to those Type 23s. So these are the now things. The future things, First Sea Lord going around, Fleet Commander going around, doing their talks, great, you know. That list, every single month that's published, is getting shorter and shorter and shorter. So, you know, soon we won't have a Navy to... Well, we'll have two aircraft carriers, we'll have the continuous at sea deterrent, but that will be about it.
Yeah. Just to add to one or two of the things you said, I think they did actually test fire one naval strike missile, but they're supposed to be buying 11 sets when we had 11.
Yeah.
In fact, we had more than 11 destroyers and frigates. And I thought, wow, you know, they must be going down to 11, which is exactly what they're doing, basically. But they don't seem to be fitting them, and they don't seem to be test firing. You see the Australians do it, other nations do it, but the Royal Navy appears to have only done one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think you're right, the taps will soon be turned off if we're not careful.
Yeah.
Just to play on words there. Thanks for listening to Warships Pod. In part two of our discussion, Lee and I will look at the failure of strategic vision in the UK when it comes to its navy, what can be learned from the Second World War, while also considering the future of Britannia Royal Naval College Dartmouth and what may happen there as training in the Royal Navy is shaken up, and a look at the Iran War and the decision to commit a British destroyer to operations east of Suez. For more on the state of the Royal Navy and also a lot of other naval news, features and pictures, please do take a look at the new June 2026 edition of Warships IFR, which is out now. It includes a look at naval power in a new age of Imperium, the Black Sea mine menace, Australia's naval boost, and how the Royal Navy has been countering Russian intrusions. Also, there's some stuff on the Iran War and the conflict's global consequences. I'm sure you will find it a fascinating read. Connect with us via social media on X and Facebook, and in both cases that's at Warships IFR. And you can also find us on YouTube at Warships IFR TV. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review on your podcast app. Keep your eye on the horizon for our next episode.